Hey, beautiful people, let's play that funky music. Hello, hello, hello. It's another week here on RTT. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am dandy as a dandelion.
Oh my goodness.
I am. I absolutely am. It's a rainy day today. I love that it's a rainy day. I have my little cup of tea ready to go.
I'm on my second iced coffee for today. I got a Bigby gave me a free refill. They said, we don't usually do this, but we give you a free refill because you sat in here and you were reading your book, and a free refill for you. So I'm on my free refill of my coffee.
So speaking of Bigby, random segue here. I went to Big, so there's a Bigby down the street for me, and I was desperate the other day. I was like, I need something. I am emaciated and I need coffee. So I went and I bought this breakfast sandwich.
Did they give you the free bag of chips?
They did not. No. But I wish they would have. I got this breakfast sandwich that's like an egg, cheese, and like two waffles.
The waffle sandwich, yeah, I know about
it. It was, I almost wept while I ate the sandwich. That with a pumpkin spice latte, a PSL, it was great.
So I always get the vegan bagel and an iced coffee. Ooh. I get a black iced coffee because I try to mitigate my calories. But at my local Bigby, if you get a drink and a breakfast sandwich, they give you a free bag of chips.
Just a bag of chips. Like, give me a free bag of chips. I need one. Arby's here. Hello, Arby. It's good to see you. Arby says congrats on
and a bag of chips.
Arby says congrats on 4,000 subscribers, Downey. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I know you texted me when you hit 4,000, and I was like, "You're HD now."
Well, I don't really like super duper follow the number as much as I used to, at least. And I looked the other day and I was at like 3,970, and I was just like, oh, wow, that's a little chunk there that I didn't expect. And then last night I looked, I'm like at 3,909. I'm like, I gained like 20 subscribers, and then suddenly like I'm over 4,000. Like, video must be blowing up or something.
It's over 4,000.
I know. I feel like I'm going Super Saiyan. I love it. So let's see. What else have we been up to? What have we been up to? Schooling it up for both of us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So I'm on week three of my multi-ethnic literature class. This week we are reading James Baldwin. I read a short story from his short stories, Go to Meet the Man, which is, there are some really good short stories in there, and there's some really horrific short stories in there. The title short story talks about a lynching, which is not very, very pleasant to read about. But it's kind of important about American history, especially in the Black community, especially in like the American South and things like that. And it was very interesting to read it from James Baldwin's perspective as a writer. So it was very interesting. But the one that I'm reading for my class kind of relates to his history personally as a writer, where he leaves America and goes to Paris to escape just the horrors of what it's like to live in America.
Interesting. That sounds like some good reading, though.
It was, yeah. I've been reading, I read a book, basically a book every day recently, like one or two a day. I'm up to about 24 books this year.
Wow. I am reading. I don't do a lot of reading anymore. I've been recently rereading my friend Charles K. Carter's book, a book of poems called "If the World Were a Quilt."
Nice.
So, eco queer poetry. You know, that's kind of like my go-to.
That kind of talks about the AIDS quilt, right?
I would say that it does make a connection to it of sorts. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am participating in a book circle at work. We're reading the book Nice Racism by, I know that her last name is D'Angelo. She was also the author of White Fragility, which is.
Oh, yeah.
That came out. It's a really good book so far. It's very illuminating, and I think that more people with privilege should try to read some literature on this, because it kind of helps unpack like those more insidious forms of like racism that we're all conditioned in, that we don't always realize that we are engaging in, if that makes sense. So what's
the book called?
It's called Nice Racism.
Oh, like being, you know, saying that you're a white liberal, but then being racist.
But then doing the exact opposite of what you're trying. Yeah. So it definitely creates a commentary on how, like, the social justice world, or, like, even workspaces that try to be, like, super progressive are actually really not, you know?
Yeah.
So beyond that, though, what I've been... I've been doing a little bit of yard work. I have been leaf blowing. I hate leaf blowing. And that's about it for me. Oh, Octpoember. We've been doing that. Mm-hmm. I think we have about like 18 to 20 people participating this year.
Nice.
Which is phenomenal. I'm super excited that it's kind of turning into something.
I'm one of those people.
You are one of, well, I say we, cause like, I don't know. We've always done it together. So I kind of think of it as a we thing. So
it's true.
You know what I mean? But no, I feel like I'm regaining my poetry spark again, because it was gone for a while.
You always feel this way in October when you start doing Octpoember, because it kind of like
it zhuzhes it up, you know, like it gets it going again.
Although I think I'm going to abandon Inktober and instead use all of the resources I would put towards Inktober to make my Gothic tarot deck.
That's a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. Are you going to do videos about it, documenting it, or just...
I am not. I'm going to just show up one day and have a Gothic tarot deck.
You know, that's probably a good thing, because even doing videos about it might be kind of like taking energy away from like focusing on the artistic process, right?
I just kind of want to sneak around and do stuff in the background.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. So today is National Poetry Day.
I want you to read the Pierce Brosnan poem.
Well, we're both going to celebrate by reading a piece. So I am going to read my sultry, queer, gay awakening Pierce Brosnan poem. I don't normally write a lot of poems like this, so this is different for me.
I just love your poetry, because you are so much more descriptive than I am.
Oh, I don't believe that for one moment. So here it is. The theme for the day was sublime, so like I wrote about like natural disasters, my favorite natural disaster being volcanoes, because I've always been fascinated by them. So here we go. Sulfur and slumber. A flotsam of books was the best pillow, because 2 a.m. was an unknown time, past the point of mysterious moonsets, long after the deaths of flashlights, and beyond the dying uranium glow of stick-on ceiling stars. Geology for kids was enough to strike a spark for the rock collectors, the wannabe volcanologists who made mountains out of mache, played with chemical reactions to unearth the planet's wealth of power. This night, though, National Geographic Volcano Nature's Inferno, paired with an undercover viewing of Dante's Peak, transmogrified science projects into backyard hellscapes, and last week's science class premiere of Up From the Ashes made Mount St. Helens spring next door. No, not even Pierce Brosnan's rugged heroism could make it go away. The fear of volcanic acid baths or the shadows of pyroclastic columns racing forth, the false scent of sulfur as pumice bombs blanket quiet little towns. Still, somehow, the obsession remains despite 20 years of recurring nightmares. It seems that decades of natural disaster films in each instance Grandma said you're going to hell could never stifle an aspiring amateur volcanologist. Well, or perhaps Pierce Brosnan's smoke stoic stare was all to blame.
Cheeky.
I'm kind of proud of that poem. Like,
I am so proud of that poem.
Oh, thank you. Pierce Brosnan is still a zaddy. Really, like, let me, okay.
To be fair, he's really hot in that film.
He, like, just, he's dirty and he's windblown and ashy. And for some reason, like, my 12-year-old brain seeing that, like some gay equation clicked in my chemistry and I was just like, gay, mega gay, super gay.
I can
gay
see
for
it.
Pierce Brosnan.
I see it. I see what
I want to go volcano chasing with Pierce Brosnan. Let's do it.
You're like, please, can I go? You're like, please, can I go?
I wanted to be his girlfriend in the film, but I was just like, I can't do it.
You're like, ooh, the volcano ashes.
I'm running away. Oh my God. Oh.
Pierce, the volcano's going to erupt any minute now.
Oh, that movie has some you've seen Dante's Peak, right? It has some scary moments in it. Like the grandmother, like getting out to push the boat through the acid lake and dying. Like,
yeah, that's pretty scary. That's horrifying.
I remember I saw that as a kid and I was just like super traumatized.
Where she was like pushing it through the water and she's like dying.
She was like smoking and like whimpering.
She's like screaming. She's
like, oh my God. Yeah, she was screaming. It wasn't whimpering. And I was just like, oh my God. But I was so like, oh, anyway, I could go on about that movie. Share your poem.
I wrote my poem today, this afternoon, as I was sitting in my car. It's called Center of the Galaxy. What's the way the wind blow? It brings to my face the center of the galaxy here, right here in this moment that all the details are lost. I feel it in the spinning of the earth beneath my feet as the bird cries overhead and the turning of the wheel on the gravel and the prattle rattle of human language somewhere beneath me. I am somewhere, void, capacity. The universe is so vast, empty, full, dumping into me, and I am fall upon it. I am falling off the edge. I am filling at the speed of thousands of miles an hour, vertigo, volumeness, moving, capacity. I am stretching out legs and arms, appendages. I am in the center of the galaxy, right here, now.
You know, wow. What I love about that poem, like, and you do this a lot in your poems, like, you're able to, like, juxtapose isolation and connectiveness in a very interesting way, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Like, the imagery, like, you're connected to the world with all of these different sensory details, but, like, you're also a world of your own. I love that. Cerebral. Yeah. I love it. I love it. I effing love it. I hope you're proud of that poem because I'm proud of that poem.
I really loved it. I was reading it this afternoon, like to myself, and I was like, God, this. And I was thinking about how it's going to fit, because I collect all of my poems together, and I was thinking about how it's going to fit into the collection for next year.
I'm so excited about it. It's well, and it kind of does follow the themes that you were like telling me about with that collection, right? So
it's not the collection that I'm just about to put out now. It's
a different one
that's coming out next year.
Oh, more. I'm so excited. I'm looking more, another book to look forward to. You know that I consume everything that you put out.
Because what I do is I collect all of my poetry. That's what I'm doing recently. So all of the poems that I am putting out in Beachfront Poetry that I'm putting out this year are from poems that I collected last year. So all of the poems I'm going to put out next year are from poems that I collected this year. So I'm thinking about how they're going to work together in the poetry book that I'm putting out next year.
I love that. I love that looking ahead. Arpy says, I'm proud of all of your poems. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, current event snapshot. Oh my God, what's going on? A lot's going on.
Kevin McCarthy ousted, and they're talking about making Trump the Speaker of the House. What kind of timeline are we on right now? Republicans have a hard on for Trump, first of all? Just personal. Why do they care so much about Trump? Why is there this weird, like they want to, why do they care so much about Trump?
My theory is that under him, they felt like they were under the guise of being mobilized. And that's been the first time in, 20 years that they've had any semblance of mobilization, even if it was bad mobilization. That's my best theory. But speaking of him, there was a gag order placed on Trump from the New York trial because he was saying threatening things about the clerk in that judge's cohort.
Well, he's also lying to the press, too. He said that basically the judge had dismissed 80% of the trial because of the statute of limitations, and that was not correct.
Mm-hmm. No. But that's what it all is, though. It's being very skilled with rhetoric and manipulating via propaganda, etc. Like, and people with that level of social power have done that type of thing for years, unfortunately. And there are many segments of the media that go along with that, or at least give platform to that, you know?
Yeah.
Which is concerning. So, So in other words, things are a hot mess. There's been flooding in New York. It's been a hot mess over there. I've been seeing a lot of the videos on TikTok of like streets being completely flooded out.
Didn't I mention that it was going to rain this year?
you foresaw that. It's the rain.
Rihanna album. I'm still waiting on the Rihanna album. I said September 18th. I'm still waiting on the Rihanna album. Also, the deep fake of the president. I'm waiting on that one. And actually, people take it as legitimate news. That's the one I'm waiting on, too. The other one I'm waiting on is that there's going to be so much flooding in Florida that an alligator, that there's going to be like a video of an alligator like flowing down the actual street, like alligators in the street.
Oh, gosh. Speaking of like events and conspiracy theories and stuff like that. So yesterday that national emergency notification went out.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of my friends has like family who's QAnon, and they were like, if you don't wrap up your cell phones in tinfoil and put them in the microwave and all of your mobile electronics, then it's going to activate the vaccine in your blood and turn you into a zombie.
What's this zombie thing?
So people thought that the vaccine implanted some sort of particle in us that would react to government intervention. So they were like,
it was like a sleeper cell in the emergency broadcast system, like initialized it and turned us into zombies.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that why everybody was like, I'm not a zombie?
So like I messaged my friend and I was just like, I want your brain.
Is that why everybody's making zombie jokes? Is because of the QAnon? Oh my God. Are you kidding me? I just wanted to get tampons yesterday.
Not kidding you. Are we ready for the show mission statement? I don't think there's anything else we missed.
Oh my God. Let's get on with it. I need to get away from this.
We need to cleanse our palate of that.
We need to get away from this and get into some smart talk.
We live in a dynamic society where social media shapes us by creating greater opportunities for connection. It has led to a developing understanding of the adversity many marginalized communities face and those who act as bystanders as atrocities take place in real time. Our goal with this show is to make connections and have challenging conversations about social topics, current events, pop culture, and art together. Let's weave the threads of understanding with what privilege we have in order to learn, educate, and create in a world that's growing. You can tell we're nearing the end of season 4 because I'm really fumbling the mission statement whenever I read it now.
It's been a week.
It's been a week.
We're turning into zombies slowly. It's fine.
Oh, you know what? If I turn into a zombie, then I don't have any responsibilities. So, So we talked last week about obviously the male dominated, you know, fantasy in media, right? So we talked about a whole variety of things ranging from Star Trek to
Joss Whedon,
to the Joss Whedonization of things, or what do we call it? The Joss Whedon effect. So many different things, and we're going to be continuing that conversation tonight because we only got through like half of our discussion questions. So where did we leave off when talking about the male dominated fantasy?
We were just about to get started into marginalized communities when it came to the male dominated fantasy. So I wanted to start by talking about how the male dominated fantasy in media talks about like the LGBTQ plus community, because I think it's kind of important. I think we were also going to talk about things like Bridgerton. I think we were going to talk about Bridgerton. Remember that?
Oh, chapter one. I'm kidding. So, no, it's interesting because, like, obviously we've acknowledged that the male-dominated fantasy is very much rooted in sexism/misogyny, right? As, like, this very systemic machine, this machination.
Isn't a show like Bridgerton kind of more of a female gaze than it is a male-dominated fantasy? Because men don't technically generally watch shows like Bridgerton because Bridgerton is sort of like a... I mean, like, that to me is a show in which a women kind of marry Sue themselves in the main female character's position. Although maybe they make their boyfriends watch that and they throw themselves into the main male character because the male character in that show, he's buff, he's rich, he's well-to-do. He's basically like a Mr. Darcy character that he's... Or like a Mr. Rochester character, you know, like a very, you know, blank slate Victorian character. He just happens to be black, which the thing about that I've seen a lot of is it race baiting, which that's a very interesting conversation in and of itself. And we can do a whole episode on whether or not there's race baiting in Bridgerton. It's not a question of whether or not it is, because it is. Right. But it's the dynamics between the characters of Bridgerton and how that dynamic works, because isn't the main character the female character, isn't she white?
I think so. Yes, if memory serves me correctly.
At least in season one, I think she is.
So, like, I don't think that Bridgerton, I mean, granted, there's room for analysis, but I don't think Bridgerton really suffers significantly from the male, from the male fantasy component. However, we could have a whole nother conversation about how it represents LGBTQ plus people. Because any LGBTQ plus people in that show are very much like relegated to the background, fleeting moments, you know. Brian is here. Hello, Brian. It's good to see you. Hello, hope you're doing Brian. Well. So one of the brothers is potentially bisexual. You know, we don't really have like specific details yet, but like from Bridgerton, like any scene with him and said Beau are very much like kind of like relegated, right? And thank you for the congratulations. I appreciate it. So we'll come back to Bridgerton in a second because I wanna hate on Joss Whedon again. So when it comes to thinking about how the male fantasy impacts LGBTQ plus people, of course, Buffy the Vampire Slayer is like at the forefront of my mind.
Oh, because you have characters like Willow.
Exactly. So Willow, it goes four seasons into the show where Willow is basically referred to as heterosexual. And her relationship with the character Tara, who, you know, it starts in like season four, like it's a very, very spontaneous thing. And there's like really no conversation around it. Now, mind you, like when it comes to coming of age, like I think there can be a certain degree of spontaneity in LGBTQ plus relationships. But
there's no like introspection about whether or not she is. It's just sort of like all of a sudden we're gay, we're in a relationship. It's sort of like
right,
kind of Joss Whedon went.
Well, and sometimes this male, you know, fantasy thing doesn't come up in like how the characters themselves are represented, but how the other characters talk about those characters. So like if you watch seasons 4 through 5 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you'll see that like some of the other characters make some really like sexualizing remarks about Willow and Tara because they
like
are
what they
the
do in private.
Yeah, they are the, you know, oh, two women, you know, like a lot of, you know, cis heterosexual men like exoticize that, right? So like you see that periodically throughout those couple of seasons of the show.
I can't think of shows like Xena Warrior Princess too. There's a lot of like there's always like heavily implied that Xena and her companion are lesbians. And so there's a lot of like sexualization and exoticization about around their relationship that mm-hmm. they've had, but they always like contend that they're like straight and that they have like that they like men. But there's always like this, but they're actually companions. And there's always like this hint, hint, nudge, nudge that they have like some kind of like relationship together. Yeah. But there's always like these like weird, like sexualizing remarks. And like, it's
or these like scenes where they're like, maybe like the filmography or the cinematography is like focusing on like very.
Or like they fall into each other and like they get into these like awkward scenes where it's sort of like, you know, male gazey, like maybe they're about to like, you know, do something sexual or like that they're about right. to kiss or do something. And it's sort of like, you know, it's very male gazey, you know.
It's also kind of queer baity.
It's very queer baity. And that they have like these and you know, I've been seeing shows like Good Omens where there's a lot of hinting around the relationship. But that's more queer baiting than anything. It's sort of like it allows for that. It's that in between area, but it's that it allows for men to feel as though they have. It allows for men to be put in that position and that they. You know, I saw another show too recently that was Our Flag Means Black. And for most of the season, there was that fantasy of, you know, they're pirates and that they have these things. But then at the last moment, it's like, oh, no, they're actually gay and they kiss at the end of the. And that was like, so it didn't make it queer baiting, but it actually hinted at the development of the relationship. I heard that was actually a really good show
as far as like, that, representation. I've heard good things about it too. Brian says, I love Xena. I really loved Xena Warrior Princess as well. Like, I remember watching that in like Star Trek Voyager and being like, yes, because like they would often premiere at the same time. And then you say awesome show, as was Hercules, The Legendary Journeys. Wasn't that like the companion show of Xena?
Yes, it was Xena and Hercules with, oh God, what's his name?
Didn't he turn into like a really problematic person too?
I can't
Kevin remember. Kevin Sorbo,
that's the one.
Oh, yeah. I love that show, though.
But that was definitely a male-dominated fantasy. Big, strong Hercules guy that always beats people up. You know,
as problematic and as homophobic Kevin Sorbo is, I would love for him to know that he was responsible for the gay awakening of many a gay.
Let's be honest
about Xena Warrior Princess.
young people don't understand what it was like before the internet fully took off and that you were able to look up stuff online. You had late night television with Xena Warrior Princess and Kevin Hercules, Kevin Sorbo.
And then when the internet came on,
and like you had things like you had to imagine your gay awakening through watching, imagining
or reading or writing a fanfic.
We did not have representation. We had male dominated fantasies where everybody hinted at being gay.
No, seriously though, like people don't realize that like in the late 90s and early 2000s, like that's one of the huge, you know, energizers behind the fan fiction movement, right? Create, like, if we're not going to see representation, then, you know, we're going to create representation for ourselves, you know, by adding to an already enriching story.
The flash fic, the flame fic.
Oh.
Like, oh, we're going to ship these two characters together, put them in the sluttiest ways possible. The sluttiest, filthiest, disgustingest. And people would be like, what is this horrible fiction? It's like my dirty, disgusting, horny teenage brain has put these two characters together in the most vile of circumstances. Please read it on fanfiction.net.
Don Killies. Did I write a fanfic about that? I don't know. Okay, I have a shameless confession. My first sultry fanfic was Dragon Ball Z.
No!
And I married Sue. I Mary Sued myself as, I don't know how familiar you are with Dragon Ball Z. There's a character named Trunks and I was his husband.
Oh my God, this is male dominated. Male dominated fantasy with Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, there's zero LGBTQ plus representation in Dragon Ball Z. However,
you created one. You made this.
There is a lot of homoeroticism in Dragon Ball Z. There's
absolutely
people have written academic papers about that. Like, anyway,
if there's not 15 minutes of video Goku essay staring at another sweaty man going, oh. I don't know what is.
Kamehameha. Oh, wow. I needed that. So, clearly, like, I mean, if we think about Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Xena Warrior Princess, like, I think that at that time, like, if we think of, like, the context of, like, the 90s and the 2000s, like, I think at the time, like, that even, like, subtle representation, like, that was still important, you know? But, like, looking at it now, retrospectively, like, if those shows were present now, like, that would not be considered quality representation by today's standards at all.
So I was talking about the show in the notes about Feel Good. Have you heard about that show?
It's on Netflix. I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
So the show has a non-binary character named Mae Martin. And so Mae Martin, they get into a relationship with someone named George. And they struggle with the relationship with George because they've suffered a lot of trauma at the hands of cis heterosexual white men throughout their childhood. That they had a lot of, like, that they were homeless when they were a kid, they ran away a lot, and that they had kind of been groomed by a lot of, white cis heterosexual men. Mm-hmm. And so for me, even though it's not exactly like a male dominated fantasy, there's something about, the mistreatment by white cis heterosexual men that kind of reminded me of the after effects of that male dominated fantasy, that men kind of are in control of the scenario somehow, that even though it doesn't show them in a positive light, they're still the center focus of the show.
Right. No, absolutely. And well, I know I keep going back to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I just think that Buffy is such a good blueprint for what we're talking about. So one of the main characters, so like the main characters are like Buffy, obviously, Willow, and a male character, Xander. I don't know how much Buffy you've watched. But Xander is very much like the textbook misogynistic character. Because he's always like, minimizing the women around him. He's always like saying sexist things. He gets in a relationship with somebody who he is very emotionally abusive towards them. And he's the one who's more often the one to objectify the LGBTQ plus relationships. And there are a lot of people who are like, that's like a very Whedonized character.
So are we talking about Spartacus the movie or Spartacus the show? Is that a show or a movie?
That's a good question.
Because wasn't that the movie that everybody was like, I'm Spartacus, I am Spartacus. Wasn't that like super gay awakening and like this?
It's a television series.
Because I'm thinking of like the Spartacus in which there were men taking baths together. And okay, because I was thinking of the movie. Because the movie Spartacus, there was a lot of homoeroticism in that movie.
What was that one Superman show from the 2000s? Smallville had a lot of homoeroticism in it.
A gay male-dominated fantasy?
Possibly.
In that gay men can put themselves in the main character's place and try to imagine themselves in kind of like possibly like implied gay relationships?
I would say so, yeah. I would say so. Now, the thing is, like, and we haven't really talked a lot about this either, but, like, gay men definitely have a projected male-dominated image in media that they want or that they expect.
Very, very muscular, very buff. They always end up shirtless somehow. A lot of Game of Thrones characters, I would say, are gay male-dominated fantasy for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, and the thing is like, and unfortunately that's something that a lot of gay men deny, but like, there's a lot of misogyny in the gay community that goes unacknowledged. Right. And until like people in the community realize that like, we're all damaged by misogyny and that we're all working to uncondition ourselves from it. Like, when's the momentum?
You know, what's another gay male, implied fantasy is Sherlock, the one with Benedict Cumberbatch. That, I mean, teen girls went crazy for that show, but that was an implied female fantasy.
Yes. A lot of, like, if we're going to talk about queer baiting, and we have talked about queer baiting, did we talk about Sherlock when we did the queer baiting episode?
Yes, we did.
Absolutely. Like, the pinnacle of an example of that.
Oh, and another show is, I think I mentioned it before too, but Supernatural.
Oh, yeah.
That's another gay male dominated fantasy. That's actually just a male dominated fantasy. It doesn't matter if you're gay or straight, but gay men could put themselves into certain characters, and straight men could also put themselves into certain characters. It didn't matter your
Oh
orientation,
yeah,
but
yeah.
both gay men and straight men can put themselves in the main characters and still get something out of it. That was very interesting.
And that show also has been criticized. It's what 15 seasons? That show had been criticized a lot for like its very poor representation of women and LGBTQ plus characters. They kind of fell into the Joss Whedonization of, killing off women or LGBTQ plus characters, right after introducing
I
them.
think it's also very fascinating, and this is just kind of an aside, but I notice, and this is something I'm noticing with things like Our Flag Means Black and with Good Omens. And I noticed this years ago when I would see things in Japanese male on male like manga. You would see like a lot of even though it was two men loving each other, and that it was very queer coded, and that it was specifically designed for men, the people who were reading that and consuming that and centering themselves around it, like creating fan fiction and creating a fan base around it, were women. And that to me is kind of a weird phenomenon. And that's the reason why I'm having trouble getting into things like Good Omens, is because I'm seeing, because popping up on my recommend feed are all of these like fan videos about like, and it's almost sexualized, it's fetishized, it's very strange to me, and it's very kind of like edits of the videos and like animated animations about it, of them like kissing and stuff. And to me, that's kind of weird and sort of gross. But also, like, you had it with this, like Sherlock Holmes, like Super Gulak and stuff like that. You would get those like videos of like, isn't it cute that they're together and things like that. But also, that to me is very strange, also weird, and kind of fetishized and gross to me, the way that they fetishize these like gay relationships as like women, you know what I mean?
Well, and we'll keep like, and I know next season, we've already started plotting out some episode ideas for next season. Next season, we're going to be talking about both the male and female gaze. And kind of like with the male gaze, we see like a lot of like cishet men like sexualizing lesbian couples, right? But we also see a lot of like cishet women sexualizing gay men. And like it is very much a thing. It very much is apparent, right? But I think it also is far less discussed as well. Arpy says, wait, Brian says wrestling nowadays is very male dominated and fantasy provoking. Yes.
That's very interesting. And I think it's always been that way. And there's always like there is a weird amount of fantasy to it, because even though you have to have a certain amount of skill to be a wrestler, there is sort of like a story element to it, that you put yourself in either the heel or the hero position. And so like you do the heel turns, and like there's like a storyline to it. But definitely, the women are very male gaze oriented, and the men are very like buff, and they have like a very certain amount of stature. Usually it is very white male oriented. BIPOC people in wrestling are very stereotyped. They are not,
If they're even there.
if they're even there at all. There were some people who broke the stereotypes, and I appreciated them every time I saw them. There was this black female wrestler that she was just amazing, and I can't remember her name now.
So while you're looking for that, Arpy says, I'd say that Yuri and Yoai are objectifying. I think so to a certain extent. While you're still looking that up, I do want to add a secondary point. Like, we are talking about, like, how certain groups of people fetishize other groups of people. Mind you, we aren't, like, aiming, like obviously people can have their preferences and their desires and what they want, but, like, if we look at it on, like, a mass scale, that's when, like, the objectification becomes part of the conversation. Ari, what were you about to say?
That's her name. Her name was Karma. Her name was Karma. Oh. She was in the WWE. She was this voluptuous black WWE wrestler, and she could throw these little tiny women wrestlers around the ring. She could actually wrestle, and that's what made her so good, is that she had the skill to be an actual, like, female wrestler, because most of the female wrestlers in WWE, they didn't have the chops to be like they could do certain floor things and they could do certain things, but what made Karma so good is that she had the chops to do, like, actual, like, technically good skills. And, like, she could do things like do the ropes, and she could do, like, jumps and do, like, cool stuff that the other wrestlers just did not have the ability to do.
But she also did so while also disempowering those stereotypes and those boxes that women are placed in, right? By that male, you know, fantasy and media.
But I loved Karma so much. She was so good.
So do we want to talk about race in male-dominated fantasy?
So sometimes it's you get a lot of things that are not so good. So you have things like Fresh Off the Boat, where they take certain cultural aspects and they try to, like, diminish them and try to feed them to a white audience as, like, you know, feed them to a white male audience or feed them to a white audience as, like, to make them more palatable, because even people who have worked for the show Fresh Off the Boat said that they tried to make it more palatable to a white audience. But specifically, I think it was a white male audience that they were trying to make it more palatable to. So you have shows like that try to, you know, take things like being an Asian American or black culture and try to water it down for white audiences to make it more palatable in a certain way, that they take that representation and try to, like, you know, rinse it.
Right.
Or whitewash it in some way.
Yeah, I was going to say whitewashing. Absolutely.
But then you have shows like Luke Cage, who is a Marvel character. And I find him to be kind of an empowering character in the Marvel universe, who has something that is very interesting to bring to a table, that he's a very, the way that they showed him in the Marvel universe was probably one of the lesser problematic characters in the Marvel universe. As far as the show goes, it was still a male dominated fantasy, and that, you know, he had a certain history, and that they were trying to stay towards comics, that they did show certain aspects to him, that he went to jail and that he mm-hmm. was wrongfully accused of a crime. So there are certain stereotypes of Luke Cage that are considered, you know, bad. But there are also things about him that he circumvents, that he overcomes, and that he shows himself. Like, there are some characters within the show of Luke Cage that are considered right. bad stereotypes of what I would say black people aren't. You know, the villains in that show are.
Well, this just proves also that, like, the male dominated fantasy is, as much as it's rooted in sexism and misogyny, it's also rooted in racism too.
Right.
So,
It can be good, but also it does have problematic stuff sometimes. I guess it just depends on what you're dealing with, because I mean, when you have white writers, it's going to be somewhat problematic. And that's the thing, like with the show Django Unchained, is that you had this very empowering black man taking control and doing things for himself and seeking revenge for or seeking vengeance against people. But you also had like Samuel L. Jackson's character, which was a raging stereotype, an Uncle Tom character, and then you had them saying the N-word, and you had them treating black people very terribly, like getting whipped, and it's antebellum South. So I mean, like, it's a toss-up. Like, you have these empowered black characters, but then you have this like vehement racism that's in these shows. So it's like, yes, you have this male-dominated fantasy, but is it because they're overcoming all of the terrible things that they have to encounter in their daily lives, or is it that you're creating some kind of, power fantasy that they're overcoming? You know what I mean? Like, they're overcoming kind of what they encounter on a day-to-day basis. I'm not sure.
No, that's like, no, that makes th those are good questions. I do want to quickly touch on the so RP says, what about how about George Lopez? Are you talking about George Lopez, the comedian?
Yeah, the comedian. He had that show. I think it was, I'm not sure what George Lopez's show was called. But I think that was very interesting, because he was talking about his family. There were stereotypes in his show as well, from what I can remember about his show. I watched a little bit of it when I was younger, because this was back in like the 90s, 2000s.
I think I remember it a little bit, yeah.
But I think it did try to show their family as being, again, you have sitcoms. What you do is you try to take a scenario where you take a comedy situation, you're trying to take your family and things, and then you water it down for white audiences. And that's it. But
Arpy says, I mean the show. Yeah, like yeah. The show definitely I would say was, well, I mean what we said earlier, whitewashed, right?
I think when you get any kind of sitcom, when you get any kind of sitcom type show, it's going to be a little bit palatable for the audience.
Or
That
made palatable, yeah.
because you have half an hour, 45, 40 minutes with commercials, it's going to be, it's going to be a certain type of message for the audience. You're always going to try to overcome and try to show a certain amount of diversity, and you're going to try to show your culture as it is. But inevitably, because you're showing it to a vast majority of white America, you are playing to that audience and whitewashing it in a certain way. And that's problematic in and of itself, that you're playing to the audience and trying to market to that audience, is the thing. So it's a balance. It's a balance between staying true to the message of not playing into the playing that you're playing to the message, but also placating the audience. And I think that's hard. It's a hard balance to reach.
No, absolutely. I think you made some excellent points with that. Now, like, do we want to switch to talk a little bit more about like people and writing for these shows in general?
I think that's kind of where we're leading to, is because we have these male-dominated fantasies that kind of treat race, that treat LGBTQ plus people, that treat women in a certain way, that center around whiteness that center around straight and center around male in a certain way, how do we decenter those things and without causing panic or changing demographics or doing things in such a way that you know raises the you're being politically correct or something.
Well, in of itself, having more representation, I think, will change that in general, because the audiences will then see more diverse people and then grow accustomed to being exposed to the fact that the world is a diverse place outside of their own little narrow periphery. Now, when it comes to writers, like, I would say, like, hire more diverse writers who have different experiences, right?
I don't even think it's necessarily about the writers, it's the writing.
And
sometimes it's a matter of the subtlety of semantics.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're talking the way that the writer describes a scene, the way that a scenario is, just even the vibe of a scene, that the way, because you were talking about before with Willow and Tara, that sometimes they would describe situations in which they would heavily sexualize the characters. And sometimes it would just be a matter of the way that characters are treated on the page. Sometimes it's just a matter of semantics, that it's the words that you use to describe yourself as a main character. It's the words that in a male-dominated fantasy, the white male main character is always the most main important person and always has to be placated.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you do with decentering that is that you slowly take away their power as a character and decenter them and make them part of the team, that they are part of the whole, and that you don't make them take the visual description of what you have in Star Trek. You have the captain, you have Captain Kirk, right? Center captain. He is, when you pan into the scene with Captain Kirk, you have him main center of the screen, always there doing commands, pushing, you know, always centering everybody around. When he walks into the room, everybody stops what they're doing and looks at the captain, and everybody always focuses on the captain. When you do those visuals of the scenes, it makes the male dominated fantasy go, I'm a white guy. That's me. I'm the most important person in the room. Everybody stops what they're doing and looks at me because I'm the white guy. The thing about it is, when you decenter white men in scripts and writing, the thing about it is he walks in. And what they would do is, if you wrote a script where you decentered white men, the captain's chair would not be there. It would be somewhere else. He would not be the most important person in the room. He would have to sit somewhere else. So that's what you had Next Gen, where they tried to start to decenter him, where he had three people sitting there, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of them being a woman as well.
Exactly. So you had that starting to decenter. But the thing about it is, he was still the center of the frame. But he was still, and two of the men were white men that were sitting there, his first and his second.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good point.
But the thing about it is, when you start to decenter white men as the male-dominated fantasy, you start to remove them as the center of the frame. And it's just small things like that, just the way that they're addressed, the way that they're talked to, the way that they handle situations of not being the most important person in the room. And that's just how you do it.
Right. And, you know, I don't think, I mean, if we focus on the Star Trek franchise, I don't really think that shows start making some significant momentum until, like, Star Trek Voyager. Star Trek Deep Space Nine did some wonderful things with, you know, regard to, you know, representation with, like, regarding BIPOC communities. Star Trek Discovery especially. But note, also, these are the three Star Trek series that have also received some of the most criticism in the past.
But even if you have a white male captain, even just moving their chair so it's not the center of the screen, even just moving them off to the side so they're actually part of the crew, and moving something into the center of the screen would change the dynamic of that male-dominated fantasy completely, I'm telling you.
Absolutely.
It would change the whole way that men, white men, experienced that show, I'm telling you.
So this just proves that, like, even the smallest adjustment could really make a big difference.
Mm-hmm, I'm telling you.
I like that. Now, does changing things also lead into the problem with sensitivities like people worrying about social justice warriors or?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you have shows like Star Trek Discovery, and you have shows like where they show that the male, white male fantasy is not being catered to, and all of a sudden you have, this show's got too political. And sort of like, it's because they're not being, it's too much of an adjustment. It's too much of an adjustment too fast. It's too much for them to handle, because basically when you have too much privilege, having any amount of privilege taken away feels as though it's a deficit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I guess, I mean, if we pan out, not to use film puns, but how, like, what does this mean for the future? What are some of the final thoughts regarding, like, culpability and change for future generations?
I think that if we start to decenter the white male fantasy and start to center that, if we start to just make tweaks and adjustments, just small tweaks and adjustments. I'm not saying that white cis men are not important. I'm just saying that other people are important too, and that they deserve, that it's about making more people equal on the stage.
Well, our media should reflect literally what the world is like.
Right.
And if people have a hard time finding that palatable, then maybe they should see the world for what it is, as right. opposed to what they have been conditioned to think it is their entire lives.
Right.
Right. Again, like, as much as representation is important for people in those underrepresented communities, it's also important for those in privileged communities, because those are... losing my voice. Those are learning. Those are crucial learning experiences, right? That they need to have.
Right.
What a great conversation. It's hard to believe the show's almost, the episode's over already. It doesn't feel like it's gone by that quickly.
I think we learned a lot this episode.
I think so too. We really unpacked quite a few things, and I'm really glad that we covered this topic. So, well, for those of you listening, obviously, if you watch the playback, feel free to comment. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel. Subscribe to Ari's channels, Strange Nothings and Tarot Time with Ari. And click like, because, you know, the algorithm and all that jazz. So, all right. We love you all, and you have a good rest of your night.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks for watching.